Oh, I feel like I've been breathing sawdust for a week.
River water. 5 minutes.
Kyler struggled to open his eyes, but when he did, he still saw nothing.
Oh, so you did pull me out. Where are we, Yuli?
Take a whiff.
Yuli was acting tough, which meant that she was terribly scared. They were in Mama Kay's boathouse on the Plith.
Nothing like warm sewage on a cool night, huh?
I thought that was your breath.
Which smells as good as you look.
You ought to be respectful.
You ought to be dead. Go to sleep.
Do you think domineering is cute?
You need to sleep. I don't know what dumb earrings have to do with it.
Ow.
See?
Oh, did you get the dagger?
What dagger?
Kyla grabbed her by the front of her tunic.
Oh, the one I had to use a pry bar to get out of your shoulder.
No wonder his shoulder hurt. He'd never seen Yuli quite so snotty and glib. If he didn't watch it, she'd burst into tears. It was one thing to feel like an ass. It was another to feel like a helpless ass.
How long have I been out?
A day and a night.
Damn.
It was the second time Yuli had seen him murdered, his body mutilated. If she had an ironclad conviction that Kyla was coming back, he was glad. He had promised her that he would, but he'd never known. All he knew was that he'd come back once. The wolf, the strange yellow-eyed man he'd met in the place between life and death, hadn't made any guarantees. Indeed, this time, Kyler hadn't met him at all. Kyler had been hoping to ask him a few questions, like how many lives he got. What if it had only been two?
And Aline?
She went to get the wagon. The guards Jarl bribed are only on duty for another hour.
Aline had gone alone to get the wagon? Kyler was so tired. He could tell Yuli was right on the verge of tears again. What kind of a man put a little girl through this? He wasn't much of a substitute father, but he used to think he was better than nothing.
You should sleep.
Make sure...
Oh. I'll take care of you. Don't worry.
Yuli?
Yes?
You did good work. Great work. I owe you. Thanks. I'm sorry.
When Caldrosa Wynn joined the queue behind the Lightskirt Tavern at noon, there were already 200 women standing behind the brothel. 2 hours later, when the line started moving, it was three times that. The women were as diverse a group as could be found in the Warrens, from guild rats as young as 10 who knew that Mama Kay wouldn't hire them but were so desperate they came anyway, to women who had lived on the rich east side just a month ago, but had lost their homes in the fires and then been herded into the Warrens. Some of those were weeping. Others just wore vacant expressions, clutching shawls tight around them. And some were longtime rabbits, laughing and joking with their friends. Working for Mama Kay was the safest gig a rent girl could get. They traded stories how the Mistress of Pleasures dealt with their new Caladorn clientele. They claimed that when the twists hurt you, they had to pay you enough silvers to cover the bruise. Another claimed it was enough crowns to cover it, but no one believed her. When Duchess Tara Grayson, the old duke, her father had been killed in the coup, led the resistance out of the city, her followers had all put their shops and homes to the torch. The fires, of course, didn't stop after devouring the properties of those who left. Thousands who stayed had been made homeless. It was even worse in the Warrens, where the poor were packed like cattle. Countless hundreds had died. The fires had burned for days. The Caladorans wanted the east side to get productive as quickly as possible. Those who were homeless were seen as an encumbrance, so soldiers forced them into the Warrens. The dispossessed nobles and artisans had become desperate, but desperation changed nothing. Being forced into the Warrens was a death sentence. For the past month, the God King had allowed his soldiers to do whatever they wished in the Warrens. The men would descend in packs to sate whatever lusts motivated them. Chanting that goddamned prayer to Kali, they raped, they killed, they stole the rabbit's meager possessions merely to throw them in the river and laugh. It seemed it couldn't get worse, but after the assassination attempt, it had. The Caladorans had moved through the Warrens in an organized fashion, block by twisting block. They made mothers choose which one of their children would live and put the others to the sword. Women were raped in front of their families. Witches played sick games, blasting off body parts. When anyone offered resistance, they rounded up and publicly executed dozens. There were rumors of safe hideouts deeper in the Warrens underground, but only people well connected in the Sakage could get into those. Everyone had places to hide, but the soldiers came every night and sometimes during the day. It was only a matter of time before they caught you. Beauty had become a curse. Many of the women who had lovers or husbands or even protective brothers had lost them. Resistance meant death. So, women came to Mama Kay's brothels because they were the only safe places in the Warrens. If you were going to get raped, many figured, you might as well get paid for it. Apparently, the brothels still did good business, too. Some Kalidorans didn't like the risks of going into the Warrens. Others just liked being assured of bedding a clean and beautiful woman. Already, though, the brothels didn't have many openings, and no one wanted to speculate why they had any at all. Caldrosa had held off as long as she could. It wasn't supposed to be like this. That Verdmeister Nefdada had recruited her specifically because she was a former Sethi pirate who'd been marooned in the Warrens years ago. She hadn't sailed in 10 years and had never been a captain, despite what she told the Verdmeister. But she was Sethi, and she had promised she could navigate a Kalidoran ship through the Smugglers' Archipelago up the Plith River to the castle. In return, she would get to keep the ship. It had sounded like a fine price for an unsavory bit of work. Caldrosa Wynne had no loyalty to Sonaria, but working for the Kalidorans was enough to make anyone's skin crawl. Maybe they even would have kept their part of the deal, giving her that sea cow of a barge that wasn't worth the nails holding it together. Maybe she could have cobbled together a crew to join her, too, except that some bastard had sunk her ship during the invasion. She'd been able to swim to shore, which was more than she could say for the 200 armored clansmen she'd been ferrying, who were now feeding fish. 4 rapes, and 2 times of almost being beaten half to death later, here she was.
9.
The girl at the door was holding a quill and paper. She had to be 18, a good decade younger than Caldrosa. And she was stunning. Hair perfect, teeth perfect, long legs, tiny waist, full lips, and a musky sweet scent that made Caldrosa aware of how foul she herself must smell. She despaired.
Caldrosa Wynne.
Occupation or special talent?
I was a pirate.
Sethi?
Caldrosa nodded, and the girl sent her upstairs. In another half an hour, Caldrosa Wynne stepped into one of the small bedrooms. The woman here was young and beautiful, too. Blonde, petite, but curvy, with big eyes and amazing clothes.
I'm Deirdre. You ever work the sheets?
I assume you don't mean sails.
Oh, a real pirate, huh?
Caldrosa touched her clan rings, 4 small hoops in a crescent framing her left cheekbone.
Tetsu clan of Hokai Island.
Caldrosa gestured to the captain's chain she wore, which she put on herself as soon as she got the job for Kalidor. She opted for the finest silver herringbone chain she could afford. It looped from her left earlobe to the lowest of her clan rings. It was a merchant captain's chain. A merchant captain of humble birth. Military captains and the bolder pirate captains wore chains looped from earlobe to earlobe behind their heads, so there was less chance they'd get ripped off in a battle.
A pirate captain, but never caught. If you're caught, you're either hanged or they rip out your rings and exile you. There's some disagreement about which is worse.
Why'd you quit?
I tangled with a royal Sethi pirate hunter a few hours before a storm. We gave almost as good as we got, but the storm drove us onto the rocks of the Smugglers' Archipelago. Since then, I've just done whatever.
Caldrosa didn't mention that whatever included getting married and working for Kalidor.
Show me your tits.
Caldrosa untied her laces and wriggled out of her top.
I'll be damned. Very good. I think you'll do fine.
But you're all so beautiful.
Beautiful we've got. Every one of Mama Kay's girls has to be pretty, and you are. What you've got is exotic. Look at you. Clan rings, olive skin, even your tits are tanned.
Caldrosa was suddenly thankful that she'd been so stubborn on her ship that she'd gone topless to make the Caladoran soldiers stare. It had given her a fierce sunburn, but her skin had darkened and the color hadn't faded yet.
I don't know how you managed to tan, but you'll have to keep it up and talk like a pirate. If you want to work for Mama Kay, you're going to be the Sithy Pirate Girl. You have a husband or a lover?
Husband. The last beating nearly killed him.
If you do this, you'll never get him back. A man can forgive a woman who leaves whoring for him, but he'll never forgive one who goes whoring for him.
It's worth it. To save his life, it's worth it.
One more thing, 'cause sooner or later you'll ask. We don't know why the Paleys do it. Every country's got twists who like hurting rent girls, but this is different. Some will take their pleasure first and only hurt you afterward, like they're embarrassed. Some won't hurt you at all, but they'll brag afterward that they did and pay Mama Kay's fines without complaining. But they'll always say those same words. You've heard them?
Calivas something or other?
It's old Calidoran. A spell or a prayer or something. Don't think about it. Don't make excuses for them. They're animals. We'll protect you as well as we can, and the money's good. But you'll have to face them every day. Can you do that?
Words stuck in Caldrosa's throat, so she nodded again.
Then go to Master Pickon and tell him you want 3 pirate girl costumes. Oh, make him finish taking your measurements before he bangs you.
Caldrosa's eyebrows shot up.
Unless you have a problem with that.
You don't think we'll have any trouble, do you?
Aline and Kyla were lying down in the wagon, spending one last night under the stars after 3 weeks on the road. Tomorrow they would enter Caernarvon and their new life.
I left all my troubles in Cenaria. Well, except for the 2 that tagged along with me.
Hey!
Despite being as scary smart as her real mother, Mama Kay, Yuli was still 11 and easily baited.
Tagged along? As I recall, this is my wagon.
That much was true. Charl had given them the wagon, and Mama Kay had loaded it with herbs Kyla could use to start an herbiary. Perhaps, in a nod to Aline's sensibilities, most of them were even legal.
If anyone tagged along, it was you.
Me?
You were making such a pathetic spectacle that I was embarrassed for you. I just wanted to stop your begging.
Well, here I thought you were a helpless little...
And now you know better.
Ain't that the truth? You've got so many defenses, a man would be lucky to get lucky with you once in 1,000 years.
Kyla Thaddeus Stern.
Thaddeus? That's a good one. I knew Thaddeus once.
So did I. He was a blind idiot.
Really? The one I knew was famous for his gigantic...
Kyla!
His gigantic what?
Now you did it. His gigantic what, Kyla?
Feet! And you know what they say about big feet?
What?
Big shoes.
I don't get it. What's it mean, Aline?
I'll tell you when you're older.
I don't want to know when I'm older. I want to know now.
Aline didn't answer her. Instead, she punched Kyla in the arm.
Are you going to wrestle now?
Yuli had climbed out of her blankets and was sitting between them.
Because you always end up kissing. It's gross.
Oh, a little contraceptive.
Much as he loved Yuli, Kyla was convinced that she was the only reason, after 3 wonderful weeks on the trail with the woman he loved, he was still a virgin.
Will you do that again?
Afterwards, Kyla listened to the sounds of the night. Aline had a gift for falling asleep as soon as her head touched a pillow, and Yuli wasn't far behind. Tonight, Kyla's wakefulness was no curse. He felt his very skin was glowing with love. Aline rolled over and nuzzled on his chest. He couldn't remember having felt so good, so accepted in his entire life. She would drool on him, he knew, but it didn't matter. Drool was somehow cute when Aline did it. No wonder Yuli got disgusted. He was pathetic. But for the first time in his life, Kyler felt like a good man. He'd always been good at things. Good at lockpicking, climbing, hiding, fighting, poisoning, disguising himself, and killing. But he'd never felt good until Aline. When she looked at him, the Kyler he saw reflected in her eyes wasn't repulsive. He wasn't a murderer. He was the substitute father who had tickle fights with an 11-year-old. He was the love who told Aline she was beautiful and made her believe it for the first time in her life. He was a man with something to give. That was the man Aline saw when she looked at him. She believed so many good things about him that Kyler alternated between believing it himself and thinking she was absolutely crazy. But being persuaded felt great. Tomorrow they'd reach Caernarfon, and for a time they would stay with Aline's Aunt Mia. With her help, she was a midwife who knew herbs, Kyler would set up a little herbiary. Then he would overcome Aline's fading objections to fornication, and the Way of Shadows would be behind him forever. After maybe 12 days, maybe 15, maybe it only felt like so many, Logan finally surrendered to sleep. In his dream, he heard voices.
He's got a knife.
If we all take him, it doesn't matter. Look how much meat there is on him.
Quiet.
Logan knew he should move, should check the knife, should wake up. He was so tired. He couldn't stay awake forever. It was too hard.
Easy, Finn. You kill Lily, we'll fucking gut you. She's the only slit we got.
Shut up your arse, Sniffles. You'll scream again, bitch. I rip out your hair and your fingernails. You don't need those to fuck.
Then the voice faded, and the heat faded, and the howling faded, and the stink faded. And Logan was truly dreaming. He was dreaming of his wedding night. He was married to a girl he barely knew, but as he talked in their bedchamber, as nervous as the beautiful 15-year-old girl across from him, he felt sudden hope blossom in his heart. This girl was a woman he could love, and inexplicably, she was his. Janine would be his wife, and one day his queen, and he knew he could love her.
Janine's dead. Stop this.
He saw in her big eyes that she could love him, too. That their marriage bed would not be a place of duty, but one of joy. Her cheeks colored as he stared at her as his wife. His eyes claimed her, not arrogantly, but confidently, gently, accepting her and rejoicing in her beauty. And when he pulled her close, she folded into him. Her lips were hot. Then, it seemed like only a second later, they were still kissing, still taking off each other's clothes, and feet were pounding up the stairs toward their room. Logan was pulling back from her, and the door burst open and Caladoran soldiers poured into the room. Logan's eyes snapped open and his fists flew as bodies landed on top of him. They were gaunt, hollow shadows of the men they had once been, so the fight proceeded slowly and clumsily. Logan heaved one man off and punched another across the jaw. Finn landed on Logan's hip, while Jake tore at Logan's face with long nails. Shaking Finn off, Logan fought his way to his feet and flung Jake off. The man fell into the hole and disappeared. Just like that, the fight was over.
What'd you do that for? We could have used that meat! You fucker! You threw away meat!
For a moment, their fury crested, and Logan thought they would attack him again. He reached to his hip to pull out the knife. It was gone. On the other side of the hole, Finn looked at him. He picked his bloody, scurvied gums with the point of the knife. Time was on his side now. Logan had thought the Holers had no society, but he'd been wrong. There were camps down here, too. The Holers were split into the animals and the monsters, the weak and the strong. Finn led the animals, who ranked mostly according to their crimes. Murderers, then rapists, then slavers, then pedophiles. The monsters were Yimbo, a big-boned, red-haired Curran, whose tongue had been cut out. Tats, a pale Lodrakari covered in tattoos who could speak but never did. And Nasher, a misshapen simpleton with massive shoulders and a twisted spine and teeth filed to sharp points. The monsters survived only through the others' fear of them and their willingness to fight. Now, as they all starved, the tenuous society was breaking down. Logan had no friends, no knife, no place. Among the animals, he was now a wolf without a pack. Among the monsters, he was a dog without his steel tooth. He had tried to see the inmates as men, men debased and humiliated and reviled and evil, but men. He tried to see in them something good, some image within them of the gods or the god who had made them. But in the shadows of the hole, he saw only animals and monsters. Logan went and sat by Nasher. The man gave him a simpleton smile, made horrible by his filed teeth. The sound made everyone freeze. The footsteps coming from the corridor above the asshole. Logan slipped into the one narrow overhang that would hide him from view as a torch-illumined face appeared above them.
Well, I'll be.
The man was black-haired, pale, and hulking, with a smashed nose, plainly Caladorn. The guard opened the grate but kept a close eye on the inmates 15 feet below him. Finn didn't even unlimber his ropes.
Figured a few of you would have stayed by now. Thought you'd be real hungry.
The man reached into a sack and pulled out a large loaf of bread. Every inmate looked at him with longing.
Well then, here you go.
The guard tossed them the loaf, but it sailed into the hole.
No!
The guard produced another loaf and tossed it into the hole too. The prisoners crowded around the hole. The next loaf bounced off of Sniffle's fingertips, and he almost fell in after it. The guard locked the grate and walked away. He didn't come back. The days passed in agony. Logan had never known such debilitating weakness. 4 nights later, if the term wasn't meaningless, Logan thought of it as night because most of the hole's inhabitants were asleep and the howling winds shrieked loudest at what the holers called noon, Finn cut one of his pedophile's throats. In moments, everyone was awake and fighting over the body. When Sniffles started beating on Nasher to try to get the man to let go of some bloody scrap Logan preferred not to identify, Nasher dropped the scrap and attacked him. Sniffles tried to fight him off, but Nasher handled him like he was a child. Yanking Sniffles' arms out of the way, Nasher sank his filed teeth into the man's neck. In the ensuing fight over the body, an entire leg was thrown clear and landed next to Logan. When Scab came after it, Logan snatched it up. To his own horror, he stared Scab down until the man turned and left. Logan took the leg back to the wall and wept. Because no matter how hard he looked at it, he saw only meat. Compared to Cenaria, Carnarvon was paradise. There were no warrens here, no stark division of have and have not, no occupying army, no stench of ash and death, no vacant stares of despair. The capital of Wadron had flourished under an unbroken line of 22 queens.
22 queens?
The thought was strange to Kyler, until he realized that Mama Kay had ruled the Sakage and the streets of Cenaria for more than 20 years.
State your business.
The gate guard eyed their wagon. The people here were taller than Cenarians, and Kyler had never seen so many with blue eyes or with such bright hair. every color from almost white to fiery red.
I buy and sell medicinal herbs. We've come here to start an apothecary.
Where from?
Scenario.
But things are real bad there. If you're setting up shop on the south side, be careful. There's some tough neighborhoods down...
The man trailed off as he caught sight of the scars on Aline's face. Faster than he would have thought possible, Kyla was furious. Aline's scars were all that marred otherwise perfect beauty. A brilliant smile. Deep brown eyes that defied the boring plainness of the word brown. Eyes that only a poet could adequately describe and only a legion of bards adequately praise. Skin that begged to be touched and curves that demanded it.
With all that, how can he only see scars?
But saying anything would only cause a scene. The guard blinked.
Go on. Thanks.
Kyla wasn't worried about Karnarvon Sakage. They were strictly small time. Mugging, picking pockets, street prostitution, and gambling on the dog fights and bull baiting. Some brothels and gambling dens actually stayed in business without being affiliated with them. Kyler's childhood street gang was more organized than the crime here. They drove through the city gawking at the people and the sights like bumpkins. Karnarvon sat at the confluence of the Wye, the Red, and the Blackberry Rivers, and its streets were bursting with commerce and the multiplicity of people who flowed with the money. They passed olive-skinned, strong-featured Sethi wearing short loose trousers and white tunics. Red-haired Kurans with their two swords and their odd fashion of braiding multicolored locks of hair into their own. A few Ladeshians and even an almond-eyed Yamuri. They made a game of it, surreptitiously pointing and trying to guess who was from where.
How about him?
Yuli pointed at a nondescript man in plain woolens. Kyler scowled.
Yes, let's hear it, hotshot. And don't point, Yuli.
The man had no distinguishing characteristics. No tattoos, standard tunic and trousers for Karnarvon, brown hair cut short, no Medaini patrician nose, nothing distinctive. Even his fairly tanned skin, that could have come from half a dozen countries.
Ah, Alaterran.
Prove it.
Only Alaterrans look that smug.
I don't believe it.
Ask him.
Aline shook her head, sinking back, suddenly shy.
Hey, master! Where are you from?
Yuli!
The man turned and drew himself to his full height.
I hail from Alaterra, by the grace of the god, the greatest nation in all of Midgiru.
I am pretty amazing.
Oh, you're probably Alaterran yourself.
Kylo laughed, but that probably soured in his mouth. Probably because he was a guild rat, an orphan, maybe slave-born. Like that Alaterran, he couldn't even guess where his parents had been from. He couldn't guess why they'd abandoned him. Were they dead? Alive? Important somehow, like every orphan dreams? While Jarl had been busy saving pennies to get out of the guild, Kyler had been dreaming of why his noble parents might have been forced to abandon him. It was useless, foolish, and he thought he'd given it up long ago. The closest thing he'd had to a father was Durzo, and Kyler had become what all men curse. Patricide. Now here he was, a loose string, tied to nothing before or behind. No, that wasn't true. He had Aline and Yuli, and he had the freedom to love. That freedom cost something, but it was worth the price.
Are you all right?
No. As long as we're together, I'm great.
In a few minutes, they had left the northern markets and were getting deeper into the shipping district. Even here, almost all the buildings were stone. A big change from Sonaria, where stone was so expensive that most of the houses were wood and rice paper. Local punks lounged in the stoops of houses and warehouses and mills, sullenly watching them go past, with the universal expression of adolescence with something to prove.
Are you sure this is the right road?
No.
Kylo kept the wagon moving, but it didn't matter. Six of the teens stood and followed a black-toothed man with a mop of greasy black hair toward them. The youths reached under steps or beneath piles of trash to find weapons. They were street weapons. Clubs and knives and a length of heavy chain. The man leading them stood in front of the wagon and grabbed the near horse's bridle.
Well, honey, time to meet our friendly neighborhood Sakage.
Kyla, remember what you promised.
You don't really expect me to...
Kyla let the question die as he saw the look in her eyes.
Hello, hello, hello.
The leader smiled broadly, showing off two black front teeth.
Honey, this is different. You have to see that.
Other people get through this sort of thing without anybody dying.
Nobody will die if we do this my way.
Excuse me, lovers. I don't mean to interrupt.
You can wait. Honey.
Either do what you've promised or do what you've always done.
That's not permission.
No, it's not.
Excuse me. This is...
Let me guess. This is a toll road, and we need to pay a toll.
Yeah, that's right.
How'd I guess?
I was gonna ask that. Hey, you shut your mouth. I'm Tom Gray, and this here...
Is your road. Sure. How much?
13 silvers.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Wait, doesn't that screw your boshes? They get 1 silver each and you get 6.
Tom Gray blanched. The boys looked at him angrily. Kyla was right, of course. Small-time thugs.
I'll give you 7.
He pulled out his small coin purse and started tossing silvers to each of the young men.
You get that much with no effort. Why risk a fight? That's as much as Tom was going to give you anyway.
Hold on. If he gave us that much that easy, he's got to have more. Let's take him.
But the young men weren't buying it. They shrugged, shook their heads, and shuffled back to their stoops.
What are you doing? Hey!
Tom had to jump aside to avoid being crushed. He twisted his ankle as he landed.
Oh, me fucking ankle, his neck!
Kyla pulled his front lips back to make himself look as buck-toothed as Tom and raised his hands helplessly. They spent the night at an inn, and Aunt Mia found them early in the morning and guided them through a tangle of alleys to her house. She was in her 40s, looked a decade older, and had been widowed for almost 20 years since soon after her son Brian was born. Her husband had been a successful rug merchant, so her house was large, and she assured Kyler and Aline that they could stay as long as they liked. Aunt Mia was a midwife and healer with plain features, twinkling eyes, and shoulders like a longshoreman.
So, how long have you two been married?
About a year.
Kyler figured that if he initiated the lies, Aline might be able to keep them going. Aline was a terrible liar. He looked at her, and sure enough, she was blushing.
Well, I did figure you were a little young to be this young lady's natural mother. How'd you find your new mother and father, Yuli?
The war.
It wasn't even a lie. And the emotion on Yuli's face was plainly real. Yuli's nurse had been killed in the fighting. Yuli still cried about it sometimes.
She was at the castle during the coup.
I'll tell you what, Yuli. We're going to take good care of you. You'll be safe, and you'll even have your own room.
And toys?
Something about the open, hopeful expression on Yuli's face made Kyler ache. Little girl should be playing with dolls. Why hadn't he ever even given Yuli a doll? Not fishing bodies out of rivers.
And toys.
Aunt Mia, we're already putting you out enough. We have money for toys, and Yuli can stay with us. You've already...
I won't hear of it. Besides, you two are still newlyweds. You need all the privacy you can get. Although, heaven knows, Gavin and I managed to plow the row quite a few times when we shared a one-room shack with his parents. But I'd guess an 11-year-old isn't quite as good about ignoring noises in the night. Am I right?
Now Kyler blushed. Aunt Mia looked at him and then looked at Yuli, who looked puzzled.
Are you telling me you haven't since you left Sonaria? Surely you'd slip away sometimes in the morning when Yuli was still asleep. No? That trip has to be, what, 3 weeks? That's an eternity for you youngsters. Well, this afternoon, Yuli and I will go for a good long walk. The bed in your room creaks some, but if you worry too much about that sort of thing, Yuli will never have a little brother, eh?
Oh, please.
Well, if you're finished with your breakfast, why don't we go meet my son?
Brian Smith worked in a shop attached to the house. He had his mother's broad, plain features and wide shoulders. As they approached, he threw a barrel hoop he was shaping onto a stack of similar ones and removed his gloves.
Morning.
His eyes immediately went to Aline. A quick glance at her scarred face, and then a too appreciative weighing of her assets. It wasn't the quick up and down that men instinctively gave every woman. Kyla wouldn't have minded that. But this wasn't a look. It was a linger. And right to Aline's face. Or rather, right to her breasts.
Nice to meet you.
Brain stuck his hand out to Kyler. He looked at Kyler, weighing, evaluating. Predictably enough, he tried to crush Kyler's hand. A trickle of talent took care of that.
Kyler!
But Kyler didn't break eye contact. There was something being settled here. And if it was primal and barbaric and petty and stupid, it was still important.
I suppose next you'll compare the size of your...
Good idea. What do you say, Brian?
Kyler loosened his belt. Kyler still didn't like him. Brian still didn't like him either. Kyler could tell.
Well, nice to meet you. I got a big order to finish.
For the rest of the morning and afternoon, Aunt Mia showed them around Kernoran. Though it was larger than Sonaria, the city didn't have the chaotic feel of Kyler's home. Most streets were paved and wide enough for two wagons and numerous pedestrians to pass at the same time. Vendors who set up shop infringing on that space were so quickly punished that few tried it. Sudden crushes pushed the crowds together whenever two wagons did pass, but there were accepted standards here and had been long enough that the wagons all traveled in 6-inch-deep ruts in the paving stones. Even the sewers in the streets passed through pipes with grates at intervals for collection of new sewage. It made the city almost not smell like a city. Castle Kernavan dominated the north side. It was sometimes called the Blue Giant for its bluish granite. The blue walls were seamless, as flat and smooth as glass, except for the numerous arrow slits and murder holes at the gates. 200 years ago, Aunt Mia said, 18 men had held the castle for 6 days against 5,000. Around the castle, of course, were the great houses. The city got dirtier and more crowded the closer it came to the docks. As in most places, the rich and noble liked to live away from everyone else, and everyone else liked to live as close to the rich as they could. Here, though, that was one line that was not regulated. Unlike Sonaria's poor, who were legally bound to the west side of the Plith, those who made the money to move could do so here. The possibility for advancement seemed to energize the entire city. Kernavan was the gold and glittering fool's gold of hope. Its vice was greed. In his own imagination, every merchant here was the emperor of the next trading empire. Sonaria was the smothering, stinking blanket of despair. Its vice was envy. No one built empires there. They just wanted a piece of someone else's.
You're awfully quiet.
It's different here. Even before Kalidor came, Sonaria was sick. This is better. I think we can make a home here.
Gods. He was about to become one of those merchants he'd been despising. Not that he had great ambitions. Being an herbalist and apothecary was really the only thing he could do besides kill. It wasn't anything he could ever dream about. What would he dream? About opening a second shop? Dominating the city's herb trade? He once held a country's future in his hands. He could have changed everything with one betrayal. Killing a man, he'd ended up killing anyway.
If I had, Logan would be alive.
As Aunt Mia led them home, he tried to force his mind into a merchant rut. He had a small amount of gold hidden in the wagon and a fortune in herbs. Had they been robbed on the way, the bandits wouldn't even have known what to steal.
Well, the house is just down this street. Brayan's out buying supplies. Yuli and I are going to a little sweetmeat shop to give you two some time to get reacquainted.
She winked at Kyler while Aline blushed. But then Aunt Mia's face darkened.
What's that?
Kyler looked toward the house. Wisps of smoke were rising and thickening rapidly. He joined the crowd running toward Aunt Mia's house. In the city, a fire was such a threat that everyone grabbed buckets and ran to help. But by the time he got there, the barn was entirely consumed with flame. It was too late to save anything. The crowds threw water on the nearby buildings while Kyler held Aline and Yuli mute. The barn was a total loss. Their two horses and Aunt Mia's old nag were left as smoking, stinking mounds of meat. There was almost nothing left of the wagon. The arsonist had found the hidden chest with its gold. The fortune in herbs had gone up in smoke. The only thing left was a long, thin box bound to the wagon's bent axle. The lock was intact. Kyler opened it, and there were his wet boy Grays and his sword Retribution, untouched, not even smelling of smoke, mocking his impotence.
Bad news, Your Holiness.
Nefdata came into the God King's bedchamber. A young Cenarian noblewoman named Magdalene Drake was tied to the bed. Both she and the God King were still dressed. Gareth was sitting on the bed beside her. He caressed a knife up her bare calf.
Oh, what is it?
One of your spies in the Chantry, Jessie Alguedin, is dead. She was last seen in the village of Taurus Bend.
The Dark Hunter killed her?
I assume so. Armand said that Jessie was planning to study the creature.
So, she went into the wood and never came back?
Yes, Your Holiness.
With a savage motion, the God King stabbed the mattress so high between Magdalene's legs that Neff thought he'd stabbed the girl. Heedless, Gareth cut toward her feet, shearing her dress to the hem and sending feathers into the air. He left the knife sticking out of the mattress, folded the cut dress back, and put his hand gently on the girl's naked thigh.
Oh, it is so hard to get spies in the Chantry. Why do they insist on throwing their lives away, Neff?
For the same reason they join us in the first place, Your Holiness. Ambition.
That was a rhetorical question.
I have some good news as well. We've captured a Ladesian bard named Aristarchos. I think you'll want to interrogate him personally.
Why?
Because I viewed him, and what he's seen is remarkable.
Out with it.
He believes he has seen the bearer of a Kakari. A black Kakari.
Stop looking at me!
Stefan was a fat cloth merchant, some former lover with a grudge who swore that he could tell V who the Shingo was. Either the Shingo was a woman, or Stefan had little preference which field he plowed, because this had been his price. V lay under him. She moved with the dexterity of an athlete and the skill of a courtesan, trained by Mama Kay herself. But her eyes were utterly dispassionate. She wasn't moaning, wasn't making faces. She wouldn't pretend pleasure, and it was giving Stefan problems. Like most men, he was three quarters talk and one quarter cock.
Oh, damn it! This is all your fault.
I thought you were gonna give it to me good.
Let your hair down.
Forget my hair.
Nisos. Couldn't they leave one damned thing alone? She rolled over and shimmied her hips, reaching out with her talent to grab him. She did things to help him forget. When she was 15 and Master Gibbet had taken her to Mama Kay, the courtesan had watched the wet boy bang her.
Child, you fuck like you don't even feel it, do you?
There was no lying to Mama Kay, so V admitted it. Her sex was totally numb.
Well, you'll never be the best, but it's nothing we can't overcome. The oldest magic is sex magic. With your tits and all the talent you've got, I can still make you into something special.
So V used her skills now.
Silly fat bastard. I've seen bigger pricks on fleas.
The words didn't have to match her intent. But like all talented women, she had to speak to use her powers.
Oh, yes!
In moments, Stefan was finished. While he was still in a stupor, as a little fuck you, she wiped herself clean on his fine cloak and sat cross-legged on the bed in the armor of her nudity.
Tell me, fat man.
By all the gods do you have?
Tell me.
Stefan covered his eyes.
He used to get runners. They knew to come to my house. I sometimes overheard bits and pieces, but he was always so careful. He burned the few letters he got. Always went outside to talk with the runners. But the night of the liberation, he got a runner. And he wrote a note. Here. Hold it up to the light.
V held the paper up in front of a lantern and could see faint impressions on it.
Save Logan Geyer and the girl and the scarred woman if you can. I will reward you beyond your wildest dreams.
Instead of a name, it was signed with two symbols. A heavy-lidded eye circumscribing a star, drawn without lifting pen from paper, and beside it, a nine-pointed star. The first was the glyph of the Sakage, the second, the symbol of the Shinga. The two together meant every resource the Sakage had was at the recipient's disposal.
He left after that and never came back. I told him I loved him and he won't even see me.
His name, fat man. Tell me his name.
Jarl. Gods forgive me. The Shinga is Jarl.
In one of her poorest safe houses, all darkness and rats and roaches like everywhere in the Warrens, Jarl and Mama Kay were meeting with a dead man. He smiled as he pulled himself into the room. His right leg was bound with splints so he couldn't bend his knee, and his right arm was in a sling. Blood had seeped through the bandages around his elbow. He had a crutch, but instead of tucking it under his arm, he had to hold it in his right hand. The injury to his elbow kept him from using the crutch on the side his knee demanded, so he more hopped than limped. He had short, cropped gray hair, was muscular in a stringy, tough old man way, and though his face was drawn and gray, he smiled.
Guinevere, it's good to see that the years have respected you, at least.
It's good to see you've not lost your silver tongue.
Brent Agon hopped to a chair and sat.
Reports of my demise and all that.
Brand, this is Jarl, the new Shinga. Jarl, this is Baronet Brand Agon, formerly Lord General of Cenaria.
What can I do for you, Lord General?
You're too kind. I come here as little more than what you see. I look like a beggar, and I've come to beg. But I am more than a beggar. I've fought on every border this country has. I've fought in duels. I've led squads of 2 men, and I've led campaigns of 5,000. You're facing a fight. Kalidor has scattered our armies, but the power in Cenaria is the Sakage, and the God King knows it. He'll destroy you unless you destroy him first. You need warriors, and I am one. Wet boys have their place, but they can't do everything. As you saw a few weeks ago, they might only make things worse. I, on the other hand, can make your men more efficient, more disciplined, and better at killing. Just give me a place and put me in charge of men.
Jarl rocked back in his chair and tented his fingers. He stared at Brant Agon for a long time. Mama Kay schooled herself to silence. She'd been Shinga for so long it was hard to risk letting Jarl make missteps, but she'd made her decision. Let Jarl take the life and the power and the gray hairs. She would help until he didn't need her help anymore.
Why are you here, Lord Agon? Why me? Terra Grayson has an army? If you'd had your way, the Sakage would have been wiped out years ago.
We heard you were killed in an ambush.
Roth Ursul spared me, as a reward for my stupidity. It was my idea that Logan Geyer marry Janine Gunder. I thought that if the King's line were assured, it would prevent a coup. Instead, it just got Logan and Janine killed, too.
Kalidor would have never let them live. In fact, it's a mercy for Janine. She could have been taken for Ursul's entertainment. And the stories I've heard...
Anyway, I crawled away. When I got home, my wife had been taken. I don't know if she's dead or if she's one of the entertainments.
Oh, Brant... I'm so sorry.
I've decided to live and make myself useful, Shinga. The noble houses want to fight a regular war. Duchess Grayson will try to wink and flatter her way to a throne. They don't have the will to win. I do. and I think you do too. I want to win. Failing that, I want to kill as many Kalidorans as I can.
Are you proposing to serve me or be my partner?
I don't give a rat's ass. And I know a lot more about rat's asses now than I ever thought I would.
And what happens if we win? You go back to trying to eliminate us?
If we win, you'll probably decide I'm too dangerous and have me killed. At the moment, that doesn't bother me much.
So I see. I'll have no divided loyalty, Brandt. You'll serve me and only me. Do you have a problem with that?
Everyone I've sworn anything to is dead. Except maybe my wife. But I have some questions. If you're the new Shingar, who's the old one? Is he still alive? How many fronts is this war going to have?
Jarl was silent.
I'm the old Shingar. I'm retiring. And not because Jarl is forcing me to. I've been grooming him for this for years. But now events have forced our hand. The Warrens are our center of power, Brandt. And they're dying. Starvation is already a problem. But pestilence comes next. The God King doesn't care what happens here. He hasn't set up any power structure at all. If we want to survive, and by we, I mean the Sakage, but I also mean Sonaria and every wretched soul in the Warrens, things have to change. We can still get wagons and boats in. The soldiers check the cargoes for weapons, and they demand bribes. But we can survive that. What we can't survive is what happens once every wagon that comes in loaded with food gets plundered. People are starving, and there are no guards to stop the theft. And if one wagon is plundered, every wagon thereafter will be. If that happens, the merchants will stop sending anything in. Then, everyone will die. We aren't there yet. But we're close.
So, what are you going to do?
We're going to set up a quiet government. Everyone knows me. I can hire bashers to guard wagons. I can adjudicate disputes. I can direct the building of shelters.
That makes you a target.
I'm a target no matter what. We've lost some of the wet boys. And I don't mean they're dead. The wet boys swear a magically binding oath of obedience to the Shingar. The God King has broken that bonding. I've learned that Hugh Gibbet told the God King who I was. Garoth doesn't believe a woman could be the Shingar, so now he's searching for the real one. But he might change his mind any day, whether I act publicly or whether I stay in the shadows. I can't control that, so I might as well do what needs to be done.
Tell me my part.
You take your pick of my men and make them witch hunters. After that, I want you to make defenses we can use if the army comes to the Warrens in force. The Kalidorans have witches, soldiers, and some of our best people on their side. The only reason I'm still alive is that they don't know who I am. But welcome aboard.
My pleasure.
Brandt Agon bowed awkwardly because of his injuries and followed a big bodyguard out the door.
You didn't tell me you knew each other?
I don't think I do know this Brandt Agon.
Answer the question.
A slight smile touched her lips, amused and a little proud that Jarl was taking command.
30 years ago, Brandt fell in love with me. I was naive. I thought I loved him too, and I ruined him.
Did you love him?
The question was proof to Mama Kay that she'd chosen the right man to succeed her. Jarl could find cracks. But it was one thing to admire his ability and another to experience it. She smiled a smile that didn't reach her eyes. It wouldn't fool Jarl for a second, but after all these years, the mask was pure reflex.
Galen Starfire is said to have thrown the blue Kakari into the sea, creating the Traxini Maelstrom. If so, it may well be there still, but I have no idea how we would recover it. The white has been lost for 6 centuries. We once believed it to be at the Chantry, but your grandmother disproved that. The green was taken to Ladesh by Hrothin Steelbender and lost. I verified that Hrothin arrived in Ladesh some 220 years ago, but could find nothing more. The silver was lost during the Hundred Years' War and could be anywhere from Aletera to Cura, unless Garrick Shadowbane somehow destroyed it. The red was cast into the heart of Ashwin Mountain, what is now Mount Tenji in Kura, by Ferric Fireheart. The Brown is rumored to be at the Maker School in Osayin, but I doubt it.
Why?
I don't think they could resist using it. With the mastery of Earth, those petty makers would become 100 times more skilled in a heartbeat. Something they made would appear sooner or later, and it would be clear that someone was making at the level they did of old. That hasn't happened. Either the men of that school are less ambitious than I believe possible, or it isn't there. The other rumor was that it was bound into Carnarvon's blue giant, the castle. I take that to be nothing more than a semi-educated boast. It's not a particularly clever place to hide a Kakari.
But we have a solid lead on the Red.
When Wurdmeister Quintus passed through Kura, he said that the explosions of Mount Tenji are at least partly magical. The problem with that, and with the blue, is that, even if we could get at it, there's some doubt about whether even a Kakari would be intact after having been exposed to so much elemental power for so long.
You don't give me much, Neff.
It's not exactly collecting seashells.
A deep insight. And the black?
Not so much as a whisper. Not even in the oldest books. If what I viewed was real, and the Ladeshian isn't simply delusional, it's the best-kept secret I've ever heard of.
That is the point of a secret, isn't it? Fetch our Ladeshian songbird. Oh, and Neff, I'll be needing some dust.
Aline wanted him to sell the sword. For the past 10 nights, they'd played their parts as if they were wooden puppets, except that once in a while, even puppets got to play different roles.
You don't even look at it, Kyla. It just stays in that chest under the bed.
Kyla sat on the bed rubbing his temples. He was so tired of this, so tired of everything. Did she really expect him to answer? Of course she did. It was all words and wasted air. Why did women always believe that talking about a problem would fix it? Some issues were corpses. Hot air made them fester and rot and spread their disease to everything else. Better to bury it and move on. Like Durzo. Worm food.
It was my master's sword. He gave it to me.
Your master gave you a lot of things. Beatings, not the least among them. He was an evil man.
You don't know anything about Durzo Blint. He was a great man. He died to give me a chance.
Fine. Let's talk about what I do know. We're destitute. We lost everything, and we made Aunt Mia and Brayan lose a lot, too. We have the means to make it right. And they deserve it. It's our fault those hoodlums torched the barn.
You mean my fault?
If he dealt with Tom Gray in his way, the man would have been too frightened to come within 5 blocks of Aunt Mia's. Kyler knew the music of the streets. He spoke the language of meat, played the subtle chords of intimidation, sang fear into the hearts of men. He knew and loved that music. But the notes of the songs Durzo taught weren't syllogisms. There was no thesis, counterpointed with antithesis, harmonized into synthesis. It wasn't that kind of music. The music of logic was too patrician for the streets, too subtle. The nuance is all wrong. The wet boy's leitmotif, whenever he played, was suffering, because everyone understands pain. It was brutal, but not without nuances. Without betraying his talent, Kyler could have dealt with all 6 street toughs and Tom Gray. The young men would have left with bruises and astonishment. Tom, Kyler would have hurt. How much would have been Tom's choice? But even if she had let him, could he have shown Aline that? What if she had seen his joy? He looked at her face, and she was so beautiful. He found himself blinking back tears.
What the hell was that about? Why don't we skip all the horse shit, where I say the sword is priceless and you say that means we'd have enough to start our shop, and I say I just can't do it, but I can't explain why, so you say that I really do want to be a wet boy and you're just holding me back, and then you start crying. So why don't you just start crying? And then I'll hold you, and then we'll kiss for an hour, and then you'll stop me from going further, and then you'll fall asleep easily while I lie awake with my balls aching. Can we hop right to the kissing part? Because the only part of our whole fucking lives that I enjoy is when I think you're enjoying yourself as much as I am. And I think tonight, maybe we'll finally fuck. What do you say?
Aline just took it. He could see her eyes welling, but she didn't cry.
I say I love you, Kyla. I believe in you. I'm with you no matter what. I love you. Do you hear me? I love you. I can't understand why you won't sell the sword. But I can accept it. All right? I won't bring it up again.
So now he was really the bastard. He was sitting on a fortune instead of using it to support his wife and his daughter and pay back people who'd suffered for him. But she was going to accept him.
She doesn't know me. She thinks she knows me, but she doesn't. She accepted me thinking Kyla was just an older, slightly dirtied version of Azoth. I'm not dirty. I am filth. I kill people because I like it.
Come to bed, honey.
Aline was undressing, and the swell of her breasts through her shift and the curves of her hips and her long legs roused the same fire in him it always did. Her skin glowed in the candlelight, and his eyes fixed on the point of one nipple as she blew out the candle. He was already in his undergarments, and he wanted her. He wanted her so fiercely it shook him. He lay down, but he didn't touch her. The Kakari had cursed him with perfect vision despite any darkness. Cursed because he could still see her. He could see the pain on her face. His lust was a chain, and he felt a slave to it, and it disgusted him. So when she turned toward him and touched him, he didn't move. He rolled onto his back and stared at the ceiling.
Well, I shouldn't be here. What am I doing? Happiness isn't for murderers. I can't change. I'm worthless. I'm nothing. An herbalist without herbs. A father who's not a father. A husband who's not a husband. A killer who doesn't kill. That sword is me. That's why I can't get rid of it. It's what I am. A sheathed sword worth a fortune, sitting in the bottom of a trunk. Worse than useless. A waste.
Kyler sat up in the bed, then stood. He reached underneath the bed and pulled out the narrow chest.
Honey?
Kyler dressed in moments. Blint had made him practice even this. Strapping knives to his arms and legs, securing a set of picks to a wrist and a folding grapnel to the small of his back. Adjusting the gray folds of cloth so they dampen all sound. Strapping retribution to his back and pulling on a black silk mask.
Honey, what are you doing?
He didn't go out the door and walk down the stairs. No, not tonight. Instead, he opened the window. The air smelled good, free. He held the great breath in his lungs as if he could trap that freedom within him.
Just what I always do, love. I'm fucking it up.
With a surge of his talent, he leapt out into the night. Furl Callius had been given the shit duty again. After his unit had been slaughtered during the invasion, he'd been picked for every bad assignment. Throwing bodies off that rickety, half-burnt bridge, helping the cooks move supplies into the castle, helping the Meisters build the God King's new wall around the city, double and triple guard duties, and never a choice assignment like on the Vanden Bridge where the guards took a week's pay home in bribes every shift just for letting a few crooks across. Now this. He looked at his prisoner with disgust. The man was fat, with the soft hands of a Southern noble, though he wore his red beard in the Caladoran fashion. His nose was crooked and his eyebrows looked like brushes. He stared at Furl with obvious anxiety. Furl wasn't supposed to talk to him. Furl wasn't supposed to know who he was. But from the first, he'd had a bad feeling about this, ever since a captain had told him the Verdmeisters wanted to see him. They'd requested him by name. He was to report immediately. That was something no Caladoran wanted to hear. Furl thought it was about his little souvenir, the dragon-hilted sword he'd taken from the bridge. But that hadn't been why they'd wanted him, though he'd nearly wet himself when he saw he was speaking with the Lodrakari Vordmeister Nefdada himself. No Wurdmeister was normal, but Neff was spooky even for a Wurdmeister. Furl had stared at the 12 knotted cords representing the Shuras Neff had mastered for the entire time Neff spoke. It was too scary to look at his face. Neff had given Furl and Furl alone this assignment. He was forbidden to speak about it with other soldiers, forbidden to even associate with them for the duration of the assignment. He and the noble were confined to some tradesman's house on the east side. Meisters had hastily made part of the house a prison. Meisters had done the work. There was only one reason for that. This was so important, it had to be done instantly and without anyone's knowledge. Then, they'd left him with enough food for several months and forbidden him to leave. That left everything feeling wrong. Furl Kallius hadn't become second, now first, in his warband by being stupid. He'd spoken with the noble and learned his name was Baron Kirov. The Baron claimed not to know why he had been imprisoned. He protested his innocence and loyalty to Kalidor, and the fact he was wasting his breath telling a mere soldier told Furl that Baron Kirov wasn't very bright. Disobeying his orders, Furl snuck away and found out that Baron Kirov had supposedly been murdered. The good Kalidoran Duke, Tensor Vargon, was now rotting in the maw for having killed a Sonarian noble who wasn't dead. That's when Furl knew he was screwed. His imagination couldn't paint any picture in which things turned out well for Furl Kallius. Why would you assign a man without a unit to this? Because you could kill him and no one would notice. When the time came, Baron Kirov would be released or killed. The only reason to keep him alive when he was supposed to be dead had to be so they could produce him at some point. But Furl? Furl would just be evidence that the Wurdmeisters were lying.
I should have gone back to Kalidor.
Furl had been offered a job tending the oxen of the baggage train. He'd almost taken it. If he had, he might have been on his way back to his clan by now. But everyone who escorted the treasure to Kalidor was thoroughly searched before they were released, and that would mean losing his precious sword. So he'd stayed, sure he could pick up a small fortune while they sacked the city. Right.
I should kill you. I should kill you just to spite them.
The fat man turned a paler shade. He could tell that Furl meant it.
Tell me, Fatty, if the Wurdmeister told you that you can live if you lied about who kidnapped you, would you do it?
What kind of stupid question is that?
You're a brave man, aren't you, Farty?
What? I can't understand your accent. Why do you keep calling me Farty?
Farty! Farty!
I'm not 40, I'm 36.
Furl's hand darted through the bars and he grabbed a handful of the Baron's blubber and squeezed it as hard as he could.
Farty! Farty!
Furl grabbed the Baron's cheek and squeezed it with his other hand. The man flailed, trying to knock Furl's hands away, but he was too weak.
Farty!
Furl released him. The Baron dropped back in his cell onto his bed and rubbed his cheek and his love handle, his eyes misty with tears.
Fatty?
Furl was lucky he didn't have a spear on hand.
Get your fat ass moving! We're leaving!